Broadcasting on the Drug Truth Network, this is Cultural Baggage.
Not only is your bag, it is really fundamentally un-American.
My name is Dean Becker. I don't condone or encourage the use of any drugs, legal or illegal. I report the unvarnished truth about the banking, prison, and judicial nightmare that feeds on eternal drug war.
Thank you for joining us on this edition of Cultural Baggage. We have an interview with Sheila Jackson Lee, U.S. Congresswoman from Texas. And a bit later, we will bring you the voices of many people from across the country about this Supreme Court ruling on medical marijuana. But let's go ahead and begin that interview.
We're proud to welcome to our show today Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee. Hello, ma'am.
It's a pleasure to be with you and your listeners today.
Yes, ma'am. There's a very important bill that you're presenting to Congress about Tulia. Please tell us about that.
Well, I think all of us are aware that the justice system is supposed to be a system that exudes fairness and allows prosecuted individual to receive his or her fair due process. And absolutely, we recognize that that did not happen in Tulia, where more than 15 to 30 of the members of that town, who happened to be African-American, were prosecuted on the basis of the testimony of one individual. It happened to be one police officer. One police officer with a lot of failings. The Tulia bill, No More Tulias and a Better Standard of Evidentiary Evidence, supported by over 60 groups around the nation, speaks to the question of absolute fairness when a person is being tried for an alleged criminal offense. In this instance, this is based upon the Byrne grants, which the president has zeroed out in his budget, but we believe will be restored in the congressional budget. And therefore, under the Byrne grants, no prosecution will be accepted unless there is additional evidentiary evidence beyond the testimony of one individual. So it would have to be videotape, other eyewitnesses, other DNA evidence, or any other evidence that would suggest that this person should be, first of all, arrested and brought to trial. This is a protective measure to eliminate the enormous abuse that took place in Tulia and, of course, most recently in Hearn. Even though these individuals received some civil compensation, their lives were destroyed, their family lives were destroyed, and federal funds were used to destroy their lives. This bill would insist that this happen no more, and that under any Byrne federal funding, any prosecution would have to have more data than just one, in this instance, police officer with a number of failings of his own, almost to the extent that he could be called a rogue cop. This does not in any way suggest that there are not professional law enforcement, they were not doing their job in a professional manner. But in this instance, we see the opportunity for abuse, and this system was abused under the Byrne funding in the Tulia case.
Yes, ma'am, and those instances of abuse are not always in the guise as shown in Tulia or in Hearn. Even the city of Houston now, with its failings in the crime lab and the drug lab, are showing once again our lack of focus, our lack of proper justice.
Well, you're absolutely right. I think that we have to be very, very diligent in ensuring that most of all the criminal justice system is a balanced system. For too long, we have been very lax in allowing the criminal justice system to err or to fall more on the side of the prosecution. I am very concerned when a criminal prosecution involves victims. We're concerned about the victims, meaning the person who may have been impacted by the crime or the criminal act. We have to be very sensitive that a defendant is innocent until proven guilty. And I believe over the last couple of decades, we've actually gotten lax on that particular aspect. And in fact, defendants have been fighting an uphill battle to, in fact, prove the fact that they are not guilty because they come in with a presumption of guilt as opposed to a presumption of innocence. The Byrne Grant situation, these drug task forces that have been utilized and not been supervised, and thereby large conspiracies of hauling in large groups of individuals without substantial evidence and then prosecuting them, certainly puts a smear on the criminal justice system, of which the United States has been known to be a nation that is a nation of laws. And we have failed that, and just because you're in the criminal system, you should not be denied any less your due process rights or a fair opportunity for a jury, a trial by a jury, and a fair trial by a jury, and a jury of your peers.
It's glaringly obvious, I think, to most, many ramifications that the drug war in particular is focused on the minority communities, and that they are the vast majority of those who wind up in prison, though they don't do drugs more so than do whites. And your thoughts there, ma'am?
Well, you're absolutely right that we have an inequity in the judicial system, particularly the criminal justice system, not only in drug cases, but in death penalty cases as well. In cases where juveniles are being prosecuted, for example, we've just passed out of the House of Representatives a bill that I vigorously opposed, and it was a anti-gang deterrence bill, which now allows the Attorney General or his representative to determine whether a 16-year-old can be tried as an adult with no judicial review whatsoever. Likewise, because of the fear of terrorism, this bill now suggests that any gang affiliation could be described as a terrorist act and thereby loop young people who may be misdirected into the terrorist system, but as well the criminal justice system, unfairly. And certainly, as it relates to the criminal justice system, it is well documented that Hispanics and African Americans are more heavily burdened than other populations, and more heavily burdened by what we call mandatory sentencing as well, which is another issue of great concern, which eliminates the discretion of judges to be able to make the right decision on whether or not this case warrants a lesser sentencing or a higher sentencing. Unfortunately, crack cocaine, which is a drug of poor populations, has gotten more higher sentencing, more penalties, higher degree of mandatory sentencing than others using other types of drugs, more glamour drugs or designer drugs, if you will. We have got to confront this judicial system, this criminal justice system, if America is going to match its promise of both democracy, equality, and justice. That is not occurring now in this justice system. As you noted, the DNA labs have found enormous problems, but we have recently passed legislation in the House and the Senate in the last session to improve the standards of DNA labs. Unfortunately, we still have a crisis here in Houston. The other problem is that we have a high incarceration rate, 2.1 million persons and 900 per month going into the federal system, most of these individuals under mandatory sentencing in the federal system, and 60% of them being people of color. We've got to find a way to have more intervention. We've got to find a way to offer early release. I have offered a good time early release bill, which I hope will have some opportunity for a hearing in this Congress and possibly a passage. That's what we're fighting for, which allows nonviolent criminals who have had no violent acts while incarcerated to be released so that they can be returned to their family and contribute back to the community. In addition, I support legislation offered by Congressman John Conyers that will restore the rights of those felons who pay their dues so they will have the right to vote, have the right to obtain a job, have the right to provide for their families. We are doing nothing but undermining the lives of individuals by not addressing the criminal justice system in a fair, honest, and direct manner.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely right. Thank you for that. There are those in drug reform who talk about the fact that the day we regulate the distribution to adults, we would take away the worth of Osama's opium, which is, I hear, is at a record level again this year, and that we would eliminate the reason for which most of these street gangs exist. Your thoughts, ma'am?
I think there are many opportunities and many options that we should address as it relates to the drug war here in the United States. We have seen that the way we have handled it has not really been effective. The drug cartels are as strong as they've ever been. In addition to human trafficking, there is, of course, drug trafficking across the southern border, probably as strong as it's ever been. We do know that the opium fields in Afghanistan are growing, we do know that drug consumption in the United States still creates a very large international market for drugs. And, of course, the question is how many people can you lock up who are drug users, and whether that's an effective vehicle to stop the drug usage here in the United States. I would argue not. First of all, in Afghanistan, unless we give the Afghani people an alternative for income, they're going to continue to utilize the fields for drug production. We've got to work on that. And then as it relates to the southern border, if we don't begin to find other economic options for people in South America, Central America, and Mexico, they too will continue drug production. And again, if we don't work more on intervention here in our own criminal justice system and our own social system, we're going to continue to have the marketplace. Regulation of drugs, for example, we need to consider the medicinal use of marijuana that people need it for health reasons. We need to find ways to cut down on the consumption. And certainly, I don't encourage the use of drugs believe that we need to find options. But certainly, criminalizing of the system doesn't seem to have worked at all.
You know, I want to say it's a tough row to hoe, if you will. It's hard for people to address this subject. I know it is in to the general populace, and so, too, it gets little exposure in Congress. Your thoughts there?
Well, first of all, it is very threatening to a politician for anyone to claim that you are soft on drug usage or soft on crime. You've got to be able to really explain to the public for them to take a look at their Constitution and understand that everyone has a right to a jury of their peers and the Fifth Amendment right to due process. They need to also be shown the statistical records to show that even with the prosecution of drugs, we have not seen a diminished use of drugs. It's got to be outreach, education, intervention, and certainly in the light of addiction, if sickness and an illness and more intervention and treatment is preferable, then would be the continued implementation of harsh laws that only fill the nation's prisons without any treatment for those who are incarcerated. If we had a policy change from the highest levels of the Department of Justice, the Health and Human Services, and there was enough courage among the national leaders, including members of Congress, to really speak about the frightening aspects of drug addiction and to educate teenagers from the early stages of the as the devastation of drug addiction, that would be a more effective utilization of our dollars and our intellect and our resources than the constant increase in a penalty and the constant increases of jail time, which is what is happening. There is room for prosecution for drug use or the production of drugs, and which is what my particular bill dealt with, the fact that I was trying to election of those drugs so that people would not use it. Same thing with the methamphetamine labs. But I do think that we spend too much time not balancing the assessment of how that you eliminate drug use. And I truly believe that we've been more effective when we've had the intervention, the outreach, and the treatment. And we've seen the dollars on the federal level and local level be decreased, as we have seen the drug courts, which have been known to be very successful also, lose federal funding and local funding. So we're not going up the right path in order to solve the drug problem, and I do think that we can do better.
In closing here, I want to present another thought that there are those, again, in drug reform who say that the day we regulate the distribution, that we would have fewer overdose deaths, that we would, you know, have less death and destruction through that process. And I guess my question, ma'am, is why has the government at those statistics? John Walters tours the nation saying marijuana is more dangerous than crack. How can we provide that proper education, I guess, is the real question.
Well, you raise a very, very thoughtful and very, very difficult question. I think, to be very honest with you, policymakers or politicians who will ultimately have to vote on these changes are very intimidated by any suggestion that they would be easy on drugs or easy on those. I think that this has to first start really, with the medical profession, social workers, to be able to come together and design a national roadmap for how do you address both drug addiction, drug usage, and begin to present that nationally to the policymakers that would generate into a legislative agenda that looks at drug usage, first of all, as non-criminal to the extent that people are using it because they're addicted or because they are becoming addicted. And then, of course, you have to separate out the criminal acts or the criminal activities of those drug cartels, drug gangs that are generating violence, death, intimidating communities. You have to prosecute those individuals, gangs that are circling only around the idea of selling drugs and making money. We must separate the two, and I think if we could separate the two, bring down consumption, define those who need drugs for medicinal purposes, particularly the marijuana issue with MS and cancer, and then separate that, and then try to work on finding alternatives for those who are drug addicted as opposed to incarceration. We might begin to get our hands around this question. You have to break the fear and the intimidation, both in terms of lawmakers who will be attacked as being soft on crime. You've got to be able to get the policymakers and health policymakers and other social policymakers to design a roadmap, and we must come together. For my part of it, I believe that it is easy to distinguish the two, that we need to promote more outreach, more intervention, more resources for treatment, and more drug courts to steer people away from incarceration and steer them toward treatment.
Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee, thank you so very much.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, ma'am.
It's time to play Name That Drug by its side effects. Euphoria thwarts prostate cancer, stops hardening of the arteries, prevents heart disease, provides relief to AIDS patients, revitalizes anorexics, provides mobility and ends spasticity for MS sufferers, and prevents brain swelling following a stroke. Time's up. The answer, an herb of the field. See Genesis chapter 1. Marijuana, cannabis, cannablossom. Not approved by the FDA.
This is the Drug War News Brief. From the Associated Press, Brownsville, a scandal-plagued former sheriff has been charged with leading a criminal enterprise while in office that included extortion, drug trafficking, and witness tampering. This according to federal officials. From Nuevo Laredo, Alejandro Dominguez was sworn in as police chief on the violent in that violent border city last Wednesday. 6 hours later, Dominguez lay dead, felled by a fusillade of bullets as he left his office. He was the seventh police officer killed since January in this city of 500,000 people. The brazenness of the slaying showed how defenseless residents are against drug-related violence, which has claimed the lives of more than 60 people so far this year. The violence has persisted despite the presence of 700 federal police and soldiers sent here in March by President Vicente Fox. A local resident said the army is here and the federal police are here, but the thugs carry on killing with impunity. We are all frightened. If the police chief can't protect himself, then how can we? Bruce Bagley, an expert on drug trafficking at the University of Miami, stated, quote, Mexico is a living nightmare right now. The police chief killing is a message from the cartels that they are above the law, end quote. To which I add, this is all, of course, because of the pain, misery, death, and confusion is brought to you by the U.S. policy of eternal drug war. We, the United States, are responsible, and we must make a change.
Let's talk about Monday's Supreme Court ruling against medical marijuana. Now, a lot of people are wondering how this could have happened. Why did they say no? Well, it's quite simple. Smoked marijuana is not good medicine, and it's harmful. The evidence is voluminous. Smoke is bad for you. And according to a March 21st, 2000 article from the BBC headlined, Cannabis More Harmful Than Tobacco, smoking three cannabis cigarettes a day is more harmful than a whole pack of standard cigarettes. And marijuana has been known to cause all sorts of nasty psychotic symptoms. On December 1st, 2004, the British Medical Journal published a study out of the Netherlands that showed a link between marijuana and schizophrenia. It's irresponsible to dismiss this as folklore. It's been all over the mainstream news. Marijuana causes memory loss, trouble with problem solving, loss of motor skills, increased heart rate, dry mouth and throat, anxiety, and it weakens the immune system. Not good medicine. No drug prescribed today is smoked, because smoking is a poor drug delivery system. How would you control the dosage?
3 milligrams.
Give me a break. Drug legalization advocates utilize the medical marijuana claims as a ploy to legalize marijuana altogether. And then they will work toward the legalization of other dangerous drugs. They work to mislead, to misinform, and to weaken your resolve. Don't be fooled. This has been Winston Francis with the official Government Truth.
This is a Drug Truth Network editorial. Who are the drug warriors? Servants of mankind, learned scholars, and unselfish bearers of moral burden? Or didactic, pedantic purveyors of ignorance, hatred, and fear? Time will soon enough tell. The Supreme Court of the land, in a split decision, has ruled that in this time of ultimate terror, that it's necessary for the forces of the United States to invest more millions of law enforcement man-hours, more billions of our tax dollars, and that our gaze should perennially focus on every garden, windowsill, and closet of this nation. Jim Sensenbrenner wants our nation to become the new East Germany, the reincarnation of Stalin's Russia. Congressman Sensenbrenner has a bill out of committee that will force parents to wear a wire and to testify against their children who smoke dope, or themselves be cast behind bars for a minimum of 2 years, a maximum of 10. 2.1 million U.S. citizens behind bars are not enough for good Americans like Sensenbrenner. The arrest of 1.6 million nonviolent drug offenders each year is not enough for the majority in Congress or for pot-smoking little W. 755,000 dope smokers arrested each year for bags of flowers is not enough for the tobacco-smoking, alcohol-swilling, pill-popping U.S. Supreme Court. The ability of the cops and district attorneys, the jailers and the piss testers to pontificate for eternal earnings, for easy pickings, and moral superiority is done. The people know, at least in regards to medical marijuana, that time has expired, the game is over, and it's time to tally the score. Zero deaths from use of marijuana. More than 10 million lives stained or outright destroyed by a criminal record for having possession or having been near someone in possession of marijuana. More than 20 million when you include all drug arrests. No government assistance for education, housing, or food. Difficult or impossible to get credit, employment, or non-governmental housing. Little wonder that those once in prison can only find employment within the black market in drugs, which, after all, is the world's largest multi-level marketing organization. Millions of families destroyed because of draconian aspects of the drug war, to include the millions of children orphaned when their parents are sent to prison for baggies of powders and potions. Subsequent generations are offered up as fodder to this eternal campaign of demonization of our fellow citizens for making a nebulous choice as to their intoxicant. Sadly, for too long, the idea of locking up the neighbor's little Johnny to protect our own little Johnny from the harms of illegal drugs seemed a good idea. No matter whose little Johnny gets sent to prison for being a druggie, the incarcerated become indoctrinated and acclimated to a life of crime, and eventually, upon their release, return to society not rehabilitated, not free of drugs. Prisons are breeding grounds for heroin addiction, unable to rejoin the workforce, and often filled with rage and hatred for the society that has destroyed their life. Doing drugs to excess is a stupid idea. Sending people to prison for drugs is insane. If we wait around long enough, the Sensenbrenners will win out. We'll put in place the mechanisms and methods that will finally destroy the America they claim to represent. The drug warriors are the best friends the drug lords could ever hope for.
On Monday, June 6th, D-Day, the Supreme Court released their finding that the feds have the right to go after medical marijuana patients. On that D-Day, I called several experts around the nation to talk about the Supreme Court's ruling.
We're speaking with Dr. Milton Friedman. Sir, this is June 6th. The Supreme Court has just handed down their ruling that will disallow for medical marijuana use. Your thoughts on that, sir?
Well, I think that's too bad. I think that the states ought to have the right to control the distribution of medical material. And there is no doubt in my mind marijuana does have medical uses.
The executive director of the Drug Policy Alliance, drugpolicy.org, Mr. Ethan Nadelman.
by virtue of the fact that the Supreme Court ruled the way it did today, all it did, Dean, was essentially to sustain the status quo. There's the state legislatures are still free to pass medical marijuana laws to legalize marijuana under state law. Citizens are still free to pursue the ballot initiative process. All it did was to say that the law is still the same, that if the feds want to go in there and bust people, they can, just as they have for the last 10 years. But people need to understand that, that this is not a setback for medical marijuana. It's merely standing still on medical marijuana.
Next, out of Canada, we hear from the publisher of Cannabis Culture magazine and the producer of Pot TV, Mr. Mark Emery.
Well, it's certainly not a surprise. I don't think anyone in America, in our movement, in any way should be surprised that Angel Raich lost her case. I was surprised that three people on the Supreme Court, in fact, supported the argument and the decision of the Ninth Circuit Court. So I'm hoping that we don't see a massive DEA raid on various, compassion clubs and providers of cannabis in California, but I suspect that's what we're going to see.
Next, we hear from the Communications Director for the Marijuana Policy Project, MPP.org, Mr. Bruce Merkin.
Patients who are protected under state medical marijuana laws are still protected. Those laws remain in full force and effect. And the Supreme Court pretty explicitly put the ball in Congress's court. Congress is going to have a chance to do that very soon. When the appropriations bill comes up that funds the Justice Department, there's going to be an amendment proposed by Congressman Hinchey from New York and Congressman Rohrabacher from California to stop the DEA from attacking patients in states that have made medical marijuana legal. And we're going to try our damnedest to get it passed this year.
Well, if folks wanted to get involved in that effort, what might they do?
Well, the simplest thing to do is log on to our website, which is mpp.org. I was appalled to see a press release from the Drug Czar's office this morning saying that this ends medical marijuana as an issue. And he has never been so wrong in his life, and he's been very wrong before, but he's even wronger this time.
Well, Bruce, thank you very much, sir.
And we'll close with this interview done with one of the plaintiffs of this case, who, along with Angel Raich, took their case to the U.S. Supreme Court. This is medical marijuana patient Diane Monson.
I'm very bitterly disappointed. I was quite hopeful that we would experience some compassion and justice from the Supreme Court, but apparently that's not to be the case. We are bloodied but unbowed. I cannot believe that Ruth Ginsburg, having gone through what she's gone through with cancer, would vote against the compassionate use of cannabis. I'm absolutely shocked. I'm sure many people throughout the nation are just reeling from this. I'm so sick for the very, very ill patients that are going to be just hurt by this beyond belief.
Okay, a couple of quick program notes. Next week, our guest will be Dr. Melanie Dreyer, the Dean of Nursing at the College of Nursing at the University of Iowa. I want to welcome our new affiliate, HCTV in Helena, Montana. I want to urge you to get involved, to become a part of the solution. I guess, my friends, because of drug prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag. I urge you to please be careful.
For the Drug Truth Network and our affiliates in the U.S. and Canada, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. This show is produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston.
Tap dancing on the edge of cannabis.